Welcome to the Council of Trent podcast, a production of Catholic Answers.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Council of Trent podcast. I'm your host, Catholic Answers apologist and speaker, Trent Horn. And today, I'm going to weigh in on controversy. There were a lot of things that I wanted to talk about over the Christmas holiday season when I took time off from the podcast, but I chose not to because it's important during the holiday season to focus on your faith, focus on what really matters, on family, and sometimes you just need a break. You need to be able to have that recharge. But I did keep a running tab of a few things that perked my interest, and a few of those I'll probably bring up here on the podcast in the next week or so. The first one being the issue of Patreon deplatforming people. If you probably heard about this in the past few weeks, several prominent people who are on Patreon, people like Dave Rubin. Dave Rubin used to be with the Young Turks, and now he does the Rubin Report. He's kind of a secular libertarian voice. I think he's got a lot of neat things to say. Dave Rubin's a name that you are probably more familiar with if you saw Bishop Barron's interview with him. Other people include Sam Harris, new atheist, author of the book The Moral Landscape, The End of Faith, and Jordan Peterson, you know, the big cause celebre, who's the Canadian academic standing up for free speech and has some common sense insights from psychology. So Jordan Peterson, Sam Harris, and Dave Rubin all voluntarily decided to leave Patreon and its platform because of concerns about deplatforming. And we see this in other areas too, like Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, that there's a concern that if you say something that offends or violates a kind of ambiguous terms of service related to one of the, you know, these big tech companies, Facebook, Patreon, whatever it may be, you could lose your platform, which in the past may not have been as big a deal for people. But today, this represents for a lot of people their main way that they get their message out to other people and a significant source of people's income. I mean, this podcast is made possible through subscribers through Patreon, that we have to be able to fund the time and effort that goes into it. And that's why I'm grateful for our subscribers at Patreon, and go to trenthornpodcast.com. Now, that does not mean, however, that I'm going to do whatever it takes to keep Patreon on my good side. That for me to be on Patreon's good side. Not at all. I'm going to continue to speak the truth. And if that runs into a problem with if the truth, the honest truth, put forward in a sensitive way, but still the truth, is a problem to Patreon's quote-unquote trust and safety committee, when they kick me off, well, then so be it. But for now, this is an effective way to keep this podcast being funded and put out there, so I'm going to stay with it. And I hope you will stay with it as well, so that we can just continue to reach a lot more people. You can find out more about how to support me at trenthornpodcast.com. But other people have chosen to leave Patreon over these banning efforts. I want to play with for you a video from Sam Harris. So Sam Harris and Jordan Peterson were some of the biggest had some of the largest accounts on Patreon. I think Jordan Peterson had something like, I don't know, 9,000 patrons who were supporting him. But they were concerned after Patreon deplatformed one of their members, a gentleman named Carl Benjamin. He goes by the YouTube name Sargon of Akkad, or Akkad, like in ancient Mesopotamia, there was King Sargon of the Akkadians. Carl Benjamin is Sargon of Akkad. He has this YouTube channel. For a while, he'd been critical of religious ideas. I think also he kind of criticizes political correctness. I'm not as familiar with Sargon's field of work. I do know that he uttered a racial slur during a live streaming gaming session, and Patreon basically instantly pulled the plug on him. Instead of giving him warnings, instead of intervening in any way. So it appears that their kicking of Sargon off had to do with their disagreement with his particular brand of politics, maybe not being as sensitive to some of the more liberal politics you might find at Patreon. So Sam Harris issued a statement, and this is what he said on his podcast to reread the statement.
Okay, Patreon. As many of you probably know, I deleted my Patreon account, and I issued a brief statement. I'll just read that here so we're on the same page. I have a little more to say.
For those of you who are watching on YouTube, by the way, I don't know why there's bicycle footage on this video, but someone in the comments is like, how is Sam so calm when he's racing on his bicycle? But whatever. By the way, if you're not watching on YouTube, we're getting the videos up very, very soon, so you'll want to check that out online. So here's the rest of what Harris has to say.
It's very brief. This is what I posted. Dear Patreon supporters, as many of you know, the crowdfunding site Patreon has banned several prominent content creators from its platform. While the company insists that each was in violation of its terms of service, these recent expulsions seem more readily explained by political bias. Although I don't share the politics of the banned members, I consider it no longer tenable to expose any part of my podcast funding to the whims of Patreon's, quote, trust and safety committee. I will be deleting my Patreon account tomorrow. If you want to continue sponsoring my work, I encourage you to open a subscription at samharris.org/subscribe.
So that's what's going on with Patreon. And that's, I've seen this ripple occur with other Patreon users, other people who rely on Patreon for support. There are people who have said that after Harris and Jordan Peterson left, many other people don't want to support Patreon either. And so that's harmed them. They've seen 30, 40% declines in their revenue streams because people are tired of this. And what a lot of people are saying right now when they see this is they get upset about freedom of speech. They say, you know, what, you know, why aren't you being in favor of free speech? Why are you censoring people? And so what I wanted to do on this podcast, I wanted to talk a little bit about Patreon just at the beginning to let you know kind of where I stand. I'll still be with Patreon because, you know, it's something, it's the easiest, most efficient way to keep the podcast going and to reach a lot of people. But I'm not going to do everything I can to win over their trust and safety committee. I'm going to speak the truth. If that offends them, that's their problem. I'll cross that bridge when I get to it if it does become their problem. But what I want to talk about in the podcast today is the issue of freedom of speech and how a lot of people, when they invoke freedom of speech, they misunderstand it. They don't, you know, they'll throw up, I have freedom of speech, or this is free speech, or that's not free speech. And this comes up a lot as a Catholic apologist. I'll go out and I'll speak, including on very controversial subjects. And people will wrongly say sometimes, I don't have the freedom to say that, or that my freedom of speech should be taken away. So let's go through some mistaken ideas people have about free speech in the United States of America, how to better understand that and share that with other people. So where do we start? Probably the best place that we could start would be the First Amendment of the Constitution. That's where freedom of speech is rooted, that the framers of the Constitution realized they had created a good document to create an efficient government. You know, you have separation of powers, you have a two-house or bicameral legislature, you have a judiciary. The Constitution is a great document. But the framers also saw a problem with it, that it might make an efficient government, but it could almost be too efficient. It could trample on individual citizens. So that's why the framers included the Bill of Rights, the amendments to the Constitution, the first 10 amendments, of course, being the Bill of Rights covering some of the most important individual freedoms and liberties that you and I have to live in a free democracy. And the First Amendment is the most important one because this allows us to change, to challenge government, and to help it better serve the common good, especially when it's not doing that. So this is what it simply says. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. So notice the very first freedom you have is not even speech, it's religion. The colonists, the American colonists, they came to America to seek freedom. A lot of them were Puritans who didn't want to worship according to the rites in the Anglican Church. There were other people, Catholics, went and founded a colony in Maryland, you know, Maryland. And then you had, just everybody else ended up on Rogues Island, where you could have all kinds of religious freedom there. Rogues Island later became, you know, well, that was the nickname for Rogues Island. Later, you now know it as Rhode Island. So having freedom of religion. But after that, though, not just the freedom of worship, but the freedom to speak. So it says, prohibiting the free exercise thereof, or abridging the freedom of speech, or of the press, or the right of the people to peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for a redress of grievances. So that's essential. That's freedom of speech. And in America, we're very blessed to have this because in a lot of other countries, you don't have the same kind of protection of speech, or you do, but it's very, very limited. Whenever I speak to my Canadian friends, they always say, oh, you can say First Amendment, because they have not the Bill of Rights. They have the Charter of Rights and Freedoms. And there is some protection for freedom of speech, but it's limited. It's not as universal as it can be. It can be subject to, you know, the common good of society. That's why in Canada you have the Human Rights Board, that if you offend people in a serious way, you can be brought before them, even if you, you know, say, oh, I don't know, refuse to call someone by an incorrect pronoun based on their biology. That's what Jordan Peterson is going on about up there in Canada, and a lot of people are challenging. But thankfully in America, we have freedom of speech. And that's what's beautiful about our country, is that good ideas will rise to the surface when people can freely debate and talk about them. Honestly, the reason the church does so well in America, I mean, we have a thriving Christian community, a thriving church here in the United States of America. And again, compare that to Europe, where the church in England, especially in continental Europe, the church is shrinking and it's dying. And it's oftentimes just doing whatever it takes to make government happy. And why is that? Well, because in Europe, many of the churches there are still formally supported by the government. In Europe, you have churches. I remember when I was in Germany a few years ago, speaking with some German Catholics, they said that if you don't check on the box that you're Catholic, so that part of your taxes go to the church, if you don't do that, you're not in good standing in the church. In some cases, you could be denied the sacraments even. That you have tax dollars are used to support churches in European countries. And so the church becomes dependent on the state, and it kind of withers as a result of that. Whereas in America, you have, now separation of church and state is not in the Constitution. That is from a letter from Thomas Jefferson he wrote to the Danbury Baptists. But what you do have is that Congress, it says, Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion. It just means there's not going to be a national church. Government is not going to directly fund churches to say this is the church or this is the religion in the United States of America. So that freedom allows the church to be separate from the state so that you can, you know, as Jesus said, give to Caesar what is Caesar's and give to God what is God's, and not worry about the two intermingling. All right, so we understand we have freedom of speech according to the Bill of Rights. How do people misunderstand freedom of speech, though? Here's the first one. The first thing we should understand about that: free speech does not mean everything you say is legal, that you can say anything you like, excuse me, whenever you like. That's not freedom of speech. In fact, there are cases where it's clear there are things that you cannot say. The most common example that's cited comes from the Supreme Court Justice Oliver Wendell Holmes. This was in 1919. The Supreme Court took a case called Schenck versus United States of America. And there was a man who was passing out flyers and pamphlets protesting the draft during World War I, you know, mandatory military service in World War I. And so his pamphlets were deemed a threat to national security because they could have curtailed the draft efforts and what needed to be done to fight the war. And Schenck actually, in Schenck versus the United States, upheld that the man could be charged for passing out these pamphlets because he was, quote unquote, a threat to national security. Thankfully, that was overturned, at least partially overturned later. But there's still a principle from Schenck that holds in constitutional law, that you can't say anything you want. You can't say things that cause danger to other people. In Schenck, Holmes and the other justices used the standard clear and present danger is what they used. And so the example Oliver Wendell Holmes used in that case, he said falsely shouting fire in a crowded building. Well, he didn't say crowded, but he did say falsely. He said, the question in every case is whether the words used are used in such circumstances and are of such a nature as to create a clear and present danger that will bring about the substantive evils that Congress has a right to prevent. So you can't do something that's going to cause immediate, you know, the word immediate's not here, it would come later. You can't do things that are cause immediate danger to other people. So some people will paraphrase to say, you can't shout fire in a crowded building or a crowded theater. Well, yeah, you can if it's on fire and you need to get people out. In those cases, you actually should shout that. So no, it's falsely shouting fire in a crowded building. And actually, in the early part of the 20th century, there were several cases where this happened. I'll give you an example. This is, if you're looking here online, this is a picture of the Italian Hall. This is in Kalamay, Michigan. It's called, look up the Italian Hall disaster. There are a bunch of striking mine workers there having a party at the Italian Hall in Michigan. This was, I think it was 1913, Christmas Eve, 1913. And they're there, they're having a party. There's, you know, hundreds of people in this hall celebrating. They're celebrating, and somebody yelled fire, and everyone rushed out of the building, and they trampled one another, and 73 men, women, and children were killed in the stampede to try to get out of the building. There was a book written on it not too long ago, and the subtitle of the book calls this the largest mass murder in Michigan history, that somebody falsely yelled fire to cause a panic and kill these people. And there's theories that it was someone from the mining company who went and did that because these mine workers had gone on strike and wanted to retaliate against them. So yeah, freedom of speech does not mean you can say whatever you darn well please, because you can't say things that now the new standard is imminent lawless action. So it went from clear and present danger, imminent lawless action, but the same idea has been upheld that you cannot utter speech that is designed or can reasonably be seen to cause imminent lawless action or to cause grave harm to other people. So, for example, a riot is a great example of this. You can't say, hey, guys, let's go beat up that guy over there. You know, go beat up that commie. Go beat up that fascist. You would not be protected under freedom of speech in the First Amendment, because here you're directly inciting imminent lawless action. You're issuing a command to break a crime, to break a law, to commit a crime. Now, if you published a book and the book said something like, I think it's great. Well, I did a podcast on this not too long ago last year about punching Nazis in the face. There are people who say, yeah, you should punch a Nazi in the face. There's lots of people who have said that online, who've written articles about that. And they're not in jail because they're voicing their opinion. Now, it's a very unsavory opinion. I think it's a dumb opinion, but it's an opinion you're allowed to have under the First Amendment of the Constitution. So you can have awful ideas about committing violence. You can write hypothetical ideas about committing violence against other people. That's why Adolf Hitler's Mein Kampf is legal to read and sell here in the United States. You can read all kinds of racist manifestos online and horrible things. You just can't utter speech that is designed to cause imminent lawless action. That is where the line is drawn. All right, example number two. First Amendment only applies to government. It applies to what government can and cannot regulate. So notice the First Amendment says that Congress shall not make an establishment of religion, or Congress shall not, and this also applies to the state legislatures. That's, we see later, like in the Ninth and Tenth Amendments and later on in the Constitution, that this is not just the federal government. The government itself cannot either censor speech because of its content, or it can't compel you to say things in most cases. That would abridge the freedom of speech. Private companies are a completely different matter. So government may not be able to tell you what you can and can't say or can and can't do, but a private company, when you're working for a private industry or you are staying at a private business like a hotel or an airline, you're riding on an airplane, you're kind of at the whims of the terms and conditions that you implicitly agree to when you buy a ticket or you stay at a hotel or you do business with a private organization. And so that's why freedom of speech, for example, you can, at a public university funded by the government, you have very, very broad free speech rights. So if I go to a public university funded by the government and they say, we don't want Trent Horn to speak because, you know, he's this crazy pro-lifer, believes men are men and women are women and all that stuff, they can't censor me. That would be a violation. That would be unconstitutional. But a private college, in many cases, there have been Catholic colleges that don't want me to speak, that have declined to have me there because I say audacious things like Catholics cannot support legal abortion or Catholics have to uphold the biological nature of sex. And guess what? They can censor me. It's their money. It's their university. They can shut me out. Private industries are different than government industries. And to give you an example, a little while back, there was a news story I remember hearing. A guy went on a Southwest airline flight and he had a t-shirt on that had an expletive. It was for a band, I think, Broad City, but it had the F word on it. And Southwest wouldn't let him fly. So I'm going to play the news story for you. You can see the whole context.
He was kicked off his flight because of the t-shirt under his jacket. He shot video of the confrontation.
They talked to you about your shirt?
They did.
This is the shirt, advertising a Comedy Central show called Broad City. The shirt says Broad Effing City.
Oh, sorry. So it wasn't a band. It was a show on Comedy Central, and it still got the F word on it.
It's a handout at the South by Southwest Festival Podolsky had just attended. He says he was spoken to about it during the delay. Then
it was only when I got back on the plane when it was going to take off that, it's, you have this much space. You're going to take your jacket off. It's hot. That I took my jacket off, And so he sent someone to remove me from the flight. So.
Did they give you any opportunity to put your jacket back on, to change the shirt, to put it inside out?
It just happened so fast, you know. Within 30 seconds, the flight was already gone.
I love, just wait for it, because that's not what happened. I love, he's like, it just happened so fast.
So, you know, I would have gladly done so.
That's what he told us, but his own video tells a different story.
Can you change your shirt?
Oh.
You put the jacket on and keep, leave it on during the flight? Can you put the shirt on inside out?
Nope.
Is there anything you can do to not display the shirt? Well, then at this point, we can't allow you to go.
I've written a speech.
That answer didn't fly with the crew.
So they're trying to accommodate this guy, saying you can have your shirt, you just got to cover it with your jacket. Or turn it inside out, and you can be on our Southwest Airlines flight, which I appreciate because I take my kids on Southwest flights when we go to visit relatives, and I don't want to see you with your broad effing city shirt on there. You go sit at home and watch Comedy Central and wear your shirt. I think it is so low class when people have public profanities and they have it displayed in public, especially when people are out with their children. Get a life. Get a life. Care about somebody else besides yourself for 1 minute. Just try that. And try having children, because I bet it'll 9 times out of 10, it'll change your mind. And I appreciate Southwest because they are a family-friendly airline. They're very kind and concerned about families being able to fly with them. That's why I fly with them. So I appreciate that they're concerned about a family-friendly environment. They won't let people with effing shirts on their plane. And that's a good thing. And so this guy says, well, I have freedom of speech. You do. You can stand outside the airport on a public sidewalk with your broad effing city shirt on. But guess what? When you buy a ticket, you agree to those little terms and conditions on the back of the ticket saying what you will and won't do. And they have the right to refuse you service if you're disruptive or, you know, break one of those terms. And so once again, you do have freedom of speech. Government can't censor you, but private organizations within the sphere of influence they have can censor you. And that goes back to Patreon. That, yeah, I'm not disputing that Patreon or YouTube don't have the right to kick off people they don't want to host in their service. They have the right to do that. I'm just saying it's not necessarily a prudent thing for them to do, because it's better to have a free marketplace of ideas for people to engage one another, that when you start censoring people, especially for petty, trivial, or purely political reasons, it's hard to see where the ball is going to stop. Let's jump ahead to another example where people misunderstand freedom of speech. Well, that was commercial speech here. We'll talk about that. Commercial speech. Congress, the government can regulate commercial speech. So they can say that businesses have to print warning labels. You know, businesses have to say things they would otherwise not want to say. Or they can be prevented from saying certain things, like the FDA will prevent people from advertising false things related to their products so people aren't misled. So government can restrict commercial speech more than personal speech, but it's not absolute. Last year here in California, the state tried to pass a law saying that pregnancy resource centers had to advertise abortion facilities, tell people where women could go and get abortions. Which is ridiculous. That's like saying that McDonald's has to advertise where the nearest gym is. They're in direct competition with one another. And so the pregnancy center sued and won on free speech grounds, saying that government could not compel them to violate their core beliefs to support abortion. And now for the next example, hate speech exception. People always think that, you know, when they talk about freedom of speech, they'll say, well, there's free speech and then there's hate speech. You know, you can have freedom of speech, you can say what you want, but there's a disturbing number of young people today who think that hate speech is illegal. But the Supreme Court has said, in fact, last year it said this, or sorry, 2 years ago, in 2017, the Supreme Court said there is no such thing as hate speech. In fact, the whole point of the First Amendment, the whole point of having freedom of speech is to protect the speech that we hate. Because likable speech needs no protection. It's the unlikable speech. It's the speech that people despise and don't want to tolerate. That is what needs protection. So, for example, you have the Westboro Baptist Church. They're the people who have the signs that say things like, God hates FAGs. You know, I don't feel like saying that slur. I'm not going to. God hates Jews. God hates America. And according to the Westboro Baptist Church, God basically hates everybody except the people who go to Westboro Baptist Church. They're a fundamentalist sect with maybe like 100 members, all mostly part of the same family outside of Topeka, Kansas. But the court has ruled time and time again that they have the right to stand on public sidewalks and have their God hates everybody signs. And that would be, if I was to give hate speech an unofficial definition, they would be participating in hate speech in the sense of saying we hate or God hates certain groups and certain people, or almost everybody. And while, once again, it's a horrible thing that they're doing, I completely 100% disagree with it, but they have the right to do that. There is an interesting case that came up recently that was, what was the case? It was Mattal versus Tam. Okay. So Mattal versus Tam was a case involving trademark law in the United States that there is a music group, the Slants. It's an it's an Asian American music group called the Slants. And Slants is kind of a derogative term for Asians because of the shape of their eyes. And in many other contexts, I'm not gonna say that because call someone that, that's a racist thing to say. But in some cases, people who are victims of racism or who are members of oppressed minorities will try to reclaim derogatory terms to use to build up their own community. That's why you have, among African Americans, appropriation of the N-word, though it's usually pronounced differently than how racists used to pronounce it. So that would be one example of trying to reappropriate a racist term. The Slants decided to take this term and apply it, ironically, to their Asian American band. But the government would not issue them a trademark on their name. So what's interesting here is that the government said, yeah, you can call yourselves the Slants. We're not going to restrict your freedom of speech, but we're not going to let you have a trademark. And a trademark is essential for them to act as a business, as a band, so that they can protect their intellectual property, so no one can steal their name, for example. And the government said, we can't issue a trademark because it's offensive. And the Supreme Court said, nope, you have to issue them a trademark. If your only reason for not doing that, a service you provide public citizens, is because it's offensive, that violates the First Amendment. So this is from the Tamal case. It says, the idea that the government may restrict speech expressing ideas that offend strikes at the heart of the First Amendment. Speech that demeans on the basis of race, ethnicity, gender, religion, age, disability, or any other similar ground is hateful. But the proudest boast of our free speech jurisprudence is that we protect the freedom to express, quote, the thought that we hate, end quote. And so government cannot restrict speech, including this is freedom of speech doesn't just mean government is prevented from hauling you off to jail because you say the wrong thing. What it means is you have the right to be able to access government services and participate in the marketplace of ideas like anybody else, regardless of the content of your speech, And so that is what's important to remember when we talk about freedom of speech, that you have freedom of speech. But what that means is that government cannot treat your speech differently just because it finds the content offensive, but it only applies to government, doesn't apply to private organizations that can choose how they're going to utter their speech in different ways. But ultimately what this does is that this protects us. It protects us and allows the truth to be able to come out. Now, look, I don't like a lot of forms of hate speech. I unequivocally condemn racism, sexism, people who campaign for genocide. I think it's horrible and awful. But the answer to, as I unofficially call it, hate speech, the answer to awful speech is not censorship. Because when you try to censor it and push it away, people still flock to it like forbidden fruit. The answer to hate speech and to awful speech is more speech, good speech. Let's argue. Let's discuss. Let's get in a fair and open forum and see who's right and see who's wrong. That is what we should be doing with the problem of hateful speech in America. And there are people who say that my speech is hateful. And you know what? I would never take away their right to call me a bigot, their right to say that I'm hateful and I'm idiotic and I'm a moron. Go right on ahead and say it. All I ask is you give me the freedom to respond. Both of us have the same open public forum to be able to share our views and then let everyone else decide who has the more reasonable position. And that's all I ask, both within the government sphere, and that's why even in the private sphere, that the marketplace of ideas is no longer restricted to a literal marketplace or public square in downtown. It's on the internet. It's online. So I believe that even if they don't have a legal responsibility, Facebook, Patreon, YouTube, Twitter, they have a moral responsibility to help keep the public square open to many different kinds of people so we can have a free exchange of ideas. And I believe if we do that, the truth will win out. Covered a lot today. Actually, I wanted to talk a bit more about something called the heckler's veto. So if you go to trendhornpodcast.com, I will upload this week a special bonus video with my thoughts on the heckler's veto, another free speech abuse people don't understand, and how it was used against me in Canada a few years ago. So go check that out over at trendhornpodcast.com. Thank you guys so much for your support today, and I hope that you have a blessed day.
If you liked today's episode, become a premium subscriber at our Patreon page and get access to member-only content. For more information, visit TrentHornPodcast.com.